Hey, thanks so much. Hi, hey. Thanks for making time for us. So Matt is here. You wanted to see me? Yeah. Yes, we wanted to see you here at Cobra Unit HQ. So Matt from HR is here. Hi, that's who's sitting also in the meeting. Just so you know.
I'm Cobra. I'm also in the Cobra unit.
We know you are a member of the Cobra unit. That's actually what we're here to talk with you about, you know.
Does he know who the Cobra is? Because I'm acutely aware we're an elite unit of assassins. We each have a special power.
There's the fear, the pain. We know.
Yes, the fury, the sorrow. Of course, the boss. And you.
I'm the shits.
Yes, the shits. Yeah. So this is the issue.
Yes. Do you need me to demonstrate my power in here? Please don't.
We've seen footage of your powers on the battlefield. Yeah, we don't need to see it in action. We're going to have to let you go from the Cobra unit.
We're looking at the roster and like, okay, we got a ghost. We have a guy who can control electricity. We have the bees guy, you know? So we kind of got that all, we got our bases covered.
We got the sniper.
We got an old, and this is kind of a bridge too far for us. And not to say that you're bad at your job. You're very, very good at it. I'm really good.
I've got 100% kill ratio. I shit until the target kills himself.
Trust me, we've seen the reports back from the battlefield. We have the one where you shit into an enemy's mouth to the point where they ballooned and were full of shit. So we got that.
It's just a little too much for us.
And we're not on the up and up.
We get that. Yellow star.
Absolutely.
Red heart.
You're a hero.
I'm a hero. You guys can't do this to me.
I know, but we got...
My skill set doesn't apply to any other job, guys. If I'm not in Cobra, what am I going to do with this power? Nobody wants this. Except on the battlefield, where being the shits is one of the most powerful things you can be.
Anyway, Matt will set you up with a severance package.
Well, I don't want a severance package. You know what? Even if you guys fire me, I'm going to be out there on the battlefield. I'm going to be doing it. I'm going to be doing my job because I'm a patriot. Okay?
Well, if you're on the battlefield, not representing either side of this, you know, potential war, we will have no choice but to unleash the Shagohod upon you, and that's not something you want to be on the business end of, my friend.
Yeah, you don't want to be.
I'm going to release a Shagohod on you.
On one? No.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, come on.
All right. Which one's the door?
Which one's the door?
The door-shaped object.
Okay.
The rectangle. Wow.
Your desk is a rectangle. Floor. You don't even go through your desk.
Okay, don't be pedantic.
Am I still allowed to sleep in the bushes outside of the building?
You weren't allowed to do that before.
All right, fair enough.
All right. Next meeting, got someone called the Balls?
It's me, the Balls!
I just want to say we love you.
We face the fear and withstand the pain in 2004 stealth action PS2 classic Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater as Kojember continues this week on How Did This Get Played?
Hey, it's How Did This Get Played, the show where we discuss the worst and weirdest and WarioWare-iest video games of all time.
Wow.
That third W courtesy of @tidy_crib. Submit yours at getplayedpod, #www. I'm Nick Y. Gear, along with my co-hosts.
I'm Metal Gear Solider and Kim Snake Eater. And I'm here with my fellow co-host,
Matt Shagohata. Kuwabara, Kuwabara, everyone.
Kuwabara, everyone. And welcome back, Bucket.
Snake, what happened? Snake! Snake! We are saying all this shit because we are continuing our month of Hideo Kojima games, Hideo Kojember, here on the podcast. And before we get into that, before we descend into this particular, I wouldn't call it a gaming hell, but it's certainly, you know what? I think the player character has a hellish experience during this operation. So before we dig into that, it is first time to briefly touch on a game we're enjoying by spending 70 seconds in gaming heaven. Matt, take it away whenever.
All right, so here I am, folks, the Xbox kid, and a new Xbox game just came out, Forza Horizon 5. It's on Game Pass, so, you know, I got my mitts on it. I downloaded it. I was like, I could go for some racing that's not Mario Kart. Not to say that Mario Kart's bad. I just was like, I could use a little more, you know, something in the vein of like a Need for Speed Underground or Need for Speed Underground 2, or like two racing games that probably the only two racing games I've played on console that I really liked. Get into Forza Horizon 5, and my God, it's wonderful. It plays so great.
Wow.
It looks beautiful. You can pick any car. I'm not like a car guy, but I went straight to the Evo 6. The Mitsubishi Evo 6 was like, it is the only car I've got like that I've picked on my own so far. Because it's like, that was like the first choice that I made. It's like, well, I got to get an Evo 6. That's going to rock. And I've been loving driving around, cruising the streets of Mexico, blasting Doughboys in my AirPods. It just,
what's that?
Driving 140 miles an hour in this game. And it's an absolute blast. I highly recommend it. And time's up.
And it's on Game Pass. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. It's a real treat.
We sound like Game Pass shills at times, but it is an incredible value.
Best value in gaming.
Based on both your and our guest's recommendation, I am currently downloading Forza, but it is on pause while we record so that we don't have all that jitteriness of the, but as soon as we're out of here, I'm going to set it back to re-download.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Wow. You can probably get your car and drive it for real, Heather.
I swear to fucking God, if I can, I'm going to die on my couch. It's going to be great.
Hey, you mentioned our guest, and I want to introduce him, but Heather, I feel like you have a bone to pick up top.
I do a little bit. It's not a bone.
Okay.
There's been a lot of feedback on various online forums that talk about our show, about our Please
sure.
Not score. And specifically that despite the game's problematic content, we went easy on the game. And I was thinking about this over the last few weeks, and I think it's the opposite. I think that if Police Knots had been some random developer's game, then we would have excused the problematic stuff as just like, who gives a shit? You can like bounce the boobies around. I don't care. I think it was specifically that it was couched in all of this other, the legacy of the developer, as well as the incongruity of the material, which is what made it upsetting to us and why I feel like the score is pretty defendable. You know, I feel like we were all born on Earth. You know, we're not unfamiliar with like the dog shit tropes that reduce women's bodies to props. But it was the fact that it was in a Kojima game that made me more aggressive towards that content than I think I would have been. Like, I've got a bunch of fucking horny games. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
It was, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's, maybe we need a new segment called Bone to Pick.
It's not a bone, right, though? And I guess the thing, I saw that too. You know, people were obviously like reacting to our response to it, and also, being incongruous with the score, I guess a word that I'm just trying out for the first time. I think the thing to remember, though, too, is that this isn't real. Like, you know, know what I mean? Like, their scores are out of a million in theory. We're not real, like, journalists were comedians who sort of like played a game and, you know, said some of it sucked and didn't, and, you know, but liked some of it too. And that's, you know, there's obviously like stuff that you could say about that, I guess, but
I didn't see any of this online controversy from these lunatics, but is the
Jesus Christ.
Is the issue just that we spent so much time like talking about what we didn't like about the game, but in the end we're still like, but we still kind of liked it? Is that the issue? Like when you say incongruity, is that just
that's part of it? Yeah,
and, we focused on the negative so much of just how this is like basically just it is just basically a visual novel Contra Snatcher, which actually has some gameplay to it.
Yeah,
and then also it has, you know, all the misogynistic tropes that are just so we talked about that so much, and then at the end we're still like, but that's still pretty good because we did, I think, have a good time with it, but despite that. That was the issue?
I think that's part of it, in that we seem to give Hideo Kojima a pass on this kind of stuff, which I think is a false premise.
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
But you know.
But you know what? From now on, let's give him a pass.
Great.
Starting now, the pass.
I'm going to rubber stamp it like I'm in Papers, Please. It's going to be great.
And what a game to do it on, to begin this new policy, and what a guest to do it with. Very, very excited to have him back. A video games and gaming culture reporter for the Washington Post, Gene Park. Hi, Gene.
Hey, Nick. Hey, Heather. Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me back. And in the spirit of your introductions, I'm going to have my own Kojima introduction. My name is Gene, the building block of all of life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yay.
It's always dripping with meaning, you know,
yes.
and symbolism. So,
well, Metal Gear Solid 1 is Gene. Metal Gear Solid 2 is me. Metal Gear Solid 3, today's game, is Scene.
Exactly.
S-C-E-N-E. So, you know, we've got you for the wrong game. Go get out of here.
And Metal Gear Solid 4 is Ween, the band. It's weird. Gene, I really do want to spend some time talking about MGS3. But before we get into that, I am just curious, as a gaming reporter and as someone who spends so much time like in your day job, like digging into video games, do you ever have time to go dig into your backlog? Are you ever like, well, I never got around to playing Firewatch, I think I'm just going to play Firewatch for funsies? Or are you just so overwhelmed with stuff that keeps coming out?
Yeah, I've really been overwhelmed with stuff. You know, I think that there's a meme that gaming journalists really seem to hate gaming. And after a year and a half of doing this, I understand that. I understand that because I'm always being forced to play games, even if they're good games. I'm being forced to play them at times where I'm not necessarily ready to play them yet, you know? I might not be in the right mindset. I just don't have a lot of time, you know. Dragon Quest XI is a game that I've been meaning to play for like a couple of years now, and I just keep getting at it, and I'm like, okay, well, I have to drop this because I have to focus on something else. Everyone, my friends are always trying to get me back into Final Fantasy XIV, and it's like, I can't play Final Fantasy XIV unless I only cover Final Fantasy XIV, you know?
Yes.
So it's really tough, you know? It's just like, I just got off the weekend finishing the Elden Ring network tests, and I played a nice chunky 20 hours of it, and that was a lot of fun. I loved it. And so when it's great, when I'm like, I'm ready to play the game right now, and I'm ready anytime, right? But then there are certain games where I'm just gonna be real tired of it, even if I like the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was a games journalist, that was my big problem too. It'd be like, for every Final Fantasy 12 that I got to review, which was like, holy shit, I have a month and a half with this game? How grateful am I to have this code this early and dig in? Then I would have to play like fucking terrible DS game after terrible DS game after terrible, and be sent off to be like, hey, we got like a review copy of Barbie's Horse Heroes, and it's you're the only person we're gonna give that game to, so it's
all right. Go easy. You have an additional design credit on that, so
you do.
Well, it was game of the year 2006, right?
Yeah.
It's deadening, man.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
It is deadening. You know, I just recently played the Guardians of the Galaxy game, and it was a really fun game, but I had to play it nonstop for several days, and eventually I just got really sick of like Star-Lord saying, come on, Rocket, because Rocket's always, you know, like busting his chops. And then so I'm just hearing these same two characters bickering all 4 days, and it's like, I could use a break to not play this, but I need to finish it before tomorrow starts, you know? So
the pressures of that, like, day and date, you know, Like there needs to be a full review of this game. They actually talked about this on the Triple Click podcast recently, because everyone, all the three hosts of that show all come from games journalism. And like the pressures of like that day and date sort of like this game has to be, this review has to be out so that it gets aggregated by Metacritic when the game's released. But also, and then also just like that's when all your traffic is going to come out, is that the first few days after the game's released or coming up to its release. And then also, that like you're dealing with embargoes, right? So like you have like limitations in terms of when you can actually get your hands on a review copy and what you can actually say about it. So it's just like it seems like a very a tough act that is, you know, like that you have to work like with like constantly churning out these reviews.
Yeah, I recently reviewed Metroid Dread and I only played it once. And for a game like Metroid Dread, like I got to play it like at least three times to really understand the game. But yeah. I had only beaten it once by the time I wrote my review. So I'm not even really happy with what I wrote because it feels completely incomplete, you know?
Right. Hey, while you're talking about Metroid, I did see your rankings of the Metroid series. And I was curious of how you... This sounds antagonistic, but I'm just I seriously am like oh, I saw you had Metroid Prime over Super Metroid. I've actually replayed Super Metroid more recently than Metroid Prime, and in my mind that might also just be where it hits me is like Super Metroid is like, oh, that's number one. But Metroid Prime in your estimation or like in your evaluation, like that really holds up.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the amount of innovation that it has, even if it's less perfect than Super Metroid, because Super Metroid is just like an airtight game, right? Metroid Prime doesn't have that, but like there's so much that it gets right, and it's so much more ambitious. It still looks good today. It still plays good. There's no other game where if you shoot her arm cannon, like the reflection flashes, her face reflects back at you. Like games still don't do that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Metroid Prime is still doing things that certain first person games still don't do. So like when I'm looking back at the legacy of these games, I'm like, Super Metroid, I think people have already learned from it and built on top of it. Whereas with Metroid Prime, I think people can still continue to mine it for ideas, and it's still not done yet. So I think the legacy of Metroid Prime is still not done yet. That's where my argument came from.
Can she urinate into a urinal? Because we've played a first-person game where that is a feature. That's like, and I haven't seen that. I feel like there's a lot of other companies that still need to catch up on just unloading piss into a urinal.
Yeah, well, Death Stranding did that, right? So
yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
In that same game, the same character can reach into a toilet and pick up a piece of shit. So until Samus can do that, let's see how far her impact actually goes.
Yeah, let's see that in the metaverse. Yeah. Am I right?
Every character can touch shit in the metaverse.
Zuckerberg insisted on that.
Yeah.
Personally. Jesus Christ.
Like we have to make the shit emoji real.
Yes, yeah. Buddy, you don't understand.
Like the next social network movie is just like a 3-hour meeting where they're trying to figure out how to wrestle control from Zuckerberg because he's so intent on making shit interactive in the metaverse.
Yeah. This guy just leaves barbecue sauce everywhere. He's a lunatic, this guy.
God. Christ.
Jesus.
Let's change topics to the Metal Gear series. Because Gene, last time you were on the podcast, we were talking Death Stranding, but you went into depth, and it's honestly one of my favorite things I guess to said on the show is when you talked about your Metal Gear Solid 2 fandom and how Kojima in general like really invigorated your love of games. But like, where do you stand on the Metal Gear series? I mean, is MGS 2 number one? Where do you kind of like mentally sort of rank these things?
Oh, okay, I can rank them. I think. MGS 2. Well, this is like a personal like impact. It's definitely sure. MGS 2, then MGS 3, then MGS 1, then MGS 5. Well, I guess MGS 5 is third because I really fucking like playing that game. Like the story makes no sense, but like the game is so fucking fun to play. Like I would play that over all the other ones. But and then MGS 4 is the last one because I still love it because it's so batshit, you know?
Right. We were going to maybe do MGS5 for this year's Cogember, and we were just like, God, it's such a commitment. I feel like we have to get started playing it now so we can tackle it next November.
It's a long game. There's so much to do, and it's kind of annoying too.
here's my question for you, and I might even put this to the floor, but like I will put this to the floor, but I'm thinking about the Metal Gear series. I kind of feel like, as we look back, like people talk about Metal Gear Solid 2 a lot, and we talk about this week's game, Metal Gear Solid 3 a lot, but I kind of feel like Metal Gear Solid 1's impact has kind of been downplayed over time, whereas when that came out for PlayStation 1, that was like a thunderbolt. That was like such like, holy shit, this game is trying things that we haven't seen in games before. It's so cinematic. Elements like the torture sequence being, you know, interactive, like things like that, like felt groundbreaking for the era. Like, I don't know, maybe my perception of other people's perceptions is inaccurate. And maybe people are still kind of talking about Metal Gear Solid 1 in the same way it was received. But I kind of feel like when you look back at PlayStation 1 era, people talk about, you know, your Final Fantasy VII's, your Final Fantasy Tactics, your Castlevania Symphony of the Nights. But Metal Gear Solid 1, that first 3D entry kind of gets downplayed a little bit. I don't know. Am I mistaken?
I guess you're right in that I don't hear it as much. And I think part of that is due to the fact that its impact is so pervasive everywhere. Okay. You know, like you see it in like The Last of Us. You see it in the new Guardians of the Galaxy game where everyone's using in-game cutscenes to portray the story. So you're never really pulled out of the experience and you always feel like you're part of it. All of those gimmicks have been replicated. So I think the respect of that legacy translates into how Kojima continues to send people into a frenzy. Just this last summer, there was this apparently indie studio that's coming out with a game called Abandoned. And if for some reason their social media team decided to kind of hint that Kojima was somewhat involved, that they try to play along with the gag. And this snowballed into like this weird like internet conspiracy where Kojima had definitely like started this new company, this shadow company, to start to create like a new survival horror game. And then the company had to come out and say, no, we do not have any association with Kojima or whatever. And then the meme started coming out where the poor director, I don't know if he's poor, I don't know who he is, but the director came out like tearfully, like his name is Hassan, and he was tearfully like saying, I don't know Kojima, I'm sorry. And then of course everyone just photoshopped Kojima into his like turtleneck sweater and everything. So yeah. Like absolute complete disrespect, but I think a lot of that excitement stems from people kind of knowing and acknowledging Kojima's legacy in terms of how he's pushed storytelling forward. And I think, you know, we saw that in Death Stranding. Everybody was going nuts for that game before people realized that it was mostly a walking game that we know we all here love. But yes. You know, and people are still super fascinated with what he might do. So I think that legacy has kind of translated into just ongoing respect for Kojima, because he still insists on being really active, you know?
Yeah. I feel like what you're talking about, because I've completely just forgotten the initial backlash to Death Stranding, which was pretty strong. I feel like people dislike that game for a bit, and I feel like it's kind of come around now, especially with the director's cut, which we'll dig into soon on the pod. Is like I feel like people have kind of like come around and be like, oh, this game is actually pretty awesome. Maybe those are just the people still playing it and commenting on it. I don't know. It might be selection bias. But it was a similar thing with Metal Gear Solid 2. And actually, there's elements of Metal Gear Solid 3 that comment on the reception and Kojima's reaction to it, because Metal Gear Solid 2 was I probably didn't articulate this well on last year's episode about it. But like I personally had kind of a reaction of Metal Gear Solid 2 of like playing the shit out of it, but also being a little disappointed that you play this game primarily as Raiden, this different character, when the whole thing was teased as like you were going to be Snake on these awesome missions, and really you're just Snake in the prologue. And I feel like there was a lot of backlash at the time to MGS2 that has faded over time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of respect that the play that it did. And then, you know, like there's other games that have pulled that off. The Last of Us Part 2 most recently.
Yes.
Where it just totally switched protagonists on you. And that also had a huge backlash, too.
Yeah.
So I think
was there. I didn't kind of see. Like, I didn't see any of that.
Kind of absorbed like what happened with I was going to say Rydonovich, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Rydin, and what he represented. I remember being really shook by playing Rydin the whole time. I remember my roommate had pre-ordered Metal Gear Solid 2, and then he went to class. I was in college when I played it, so of course I just played the whole game while he was in school. I skipped my classes because fuck school, right? And then he came back, and then he was like, and then like I was still on the couch playing, and he was like, "Why the fuck are you playing my game? Who the fuck is that guy?" And then he yeah. just got like really, really angry that I just spoiled the entire experience for him. I was like, "Dude, I don't know what's going on, man. I'm sorry. You know."
Yeah, it's that whole thing of the roommate, you and the roommate sharing a console and sharing games, and then where your relative progress was in a shared space. I definitely had that. I definitely had that with a roommate who I bought Chrono Cross, and we were both playing Chrono Cross, and I was just like, "Look, you can play this, but just like don't get ahead of me." And he was like, "Yeah, sure." And then I came home one day from class, and I was watching the ending on the TV.
Oh God!
Like,
oh man!
All right, it's fine. Let's talk about Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater this week's game.
It's Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater week, and that's a 2004 stealth action game developed by Konami and directed by Hideo Kojima. Other games from 2004, which was a great year in games, included Half-Life 2, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, Halo 2, Doom 3, and Metroid Prime 2 Echoes. As well as one of my favorites, Burnout 3 Takedown. Do you guys ever play that game? I love that game.
No.
I love a car crash game. In this game, you play as Naked Snake, who is the progenitor? Is that the right word for that? The progenitor of the protagonists from other Metal Gear games, Solid Snake. You are sneaking through the jungle in 1964 at the height of the Cold War. You're involved in secrets, espionage, double crosses, backstabbings as you fight through multiple boss battles and then eventually fight against your mentor here in spoiler country. Right, guys? Spoiler country?
Now entering spoiler country.
Pew, pew.
Secure your hats and glasses.
I'm not going to do it this time. I did it once. Okay. That's enough.
Let us demean ourselves in front of our guests.
Yep.
Let me fall on this grenade.
But I think that sets the stage. It's right mm-hmm. after the Cuban Missile Crisis, and you are involved in trying to stop Russia from developing Metal Gear. Right? That's pretty good. That was all right.
Very good.
Okay. Yeah. So the setting, I mean, it is a thing of it's like, it's such a choice to just sort of set this in the 60s during the Cold War, during the height of the space race and, you know, nuclear panic. But the date that it's set on is Kojima's first birthday. And originally it was going to be set on like the day he was born, but they had to move the chronology because they also wanted to incorporate the JFK assassination.
Got to get that in there if you can.
Got to get that in there. Yeah.
As long as we're talking about stuff that Kojima wanted in this game, did you guys know that he wanted this game to include permadeath? That you would, if you died in the game, it would delete mm-hmm. your save and then you would have to start all over again.
Probably for the best that he didn't do that.
So this is my second Metal Gear game only, and I've only played Metal Gear Solid. I've only, you know, Nick, when you said it, whenever it was last podcast, the podcast before, I was like, oh, right. He does kind of say it like a question mark. So I was really thrilled when
The thing about Snake is that he does not ever understand anything that is being told to him. He's the biggest idiot on earth. He's never heard of anything, and he's incredulous. He's just like, huh? Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's a mobile nuclear weapons delivery system.
Well, that's the thing about Metal Gear Solid 1, right? At the end of the game, you're like the super spy. Like, I'm the super spy, and nobody is telling me anything. Yeah. I have no idea what's going on, and I am way in too deep in Antarctica for some reason. And I don't know who to trust, and this guy just took his sunglasses off, and it's like, okay. So it's a little charming, right?
Yes.
He also has, like, my level of social skills. Like, somebody will talk to him and he'll be like, yeah, well, did you see this gun? It's like he's constantly showing toys to people no matter what. Like, in all of the cutscenes when Eva is talking to him or trying to get his attention sexually, romantically, he acts like I would if a girl was hitting on me at a coffee shop. I'd be like, whoa, did you guys see they make sugar without calories now? Do you see this? Each of these packets is self-sealed. And that means that you could bring it to space. Like, that's, yeah. It's
calorie, mate. What? You know? Which I've eaten those, too. I've eaten those. It seems to be a reflection of Kojima's own personality. Because that what you said right there, where he's always, like, showing people toys, reminds me of the clip where he was on the Conan O'Brien show. And Conan was inside Kojima's office and they were trying to talk about Death Stranding. And Kojima was like, look, my Ultraman toy, Ultraman, Ultraman. And he just started like turning on the sounds. And Conan's like, okay, whatever.
Gene, did you say you've eaten a calorie mate?
Yes, I have. I ordered those right after I played the game. I was like, I need to try that. I want to eat what the geisha are eating.
How's it taste? What's it like?
It just tastes like wafers. It's just wafers. And apparently, like I was full. There were those old commercials back when 24 was huge.
Yes.
So Kiefer Sutherland was doing commercials for Calorie Mate, where he would like basically not eat anything but Calorie Mate during those 24 hours of the season where he's like trying to save the country or whatever. And yeah, I did live on them for a few days. I would just go to work and I would just eat that. And I was like, yeah, sure enough, I guess I'm not that hungry. So, you know.
That's wild. So eating is a part of this game. I mean, they introduced a bunch of systems. And I think, you know, what people always think of the lore and the storytelling. And that is like obviously a huge part of it. But like, you know, there's the camouflage system in this. There's the eating system. There's a new a CQC, close quarters combat system. There's a lot of gameplay elements. And this is a pretty, you know, for one of the entries of the series, this is pretty gameplay heavy.
Yeah, they had the camouflage, they had the cutting and the broken bone system. So it totally makes sense that he would want like a permadeath because it sounds like he was really, really leaning towards something like that, you know?
I mean, I know, so I can see that people would be frustrated by these systems, the camouflage, the healing system, the food system, all these systems. I fucking loved it. I mean, like I was medium into the game in the cold open. I was like, oh, okay, I've done this before. I know these. I'm sneaking again, and it's fucking exhausting to sneak everywhere. And then it's like, hey, you've got a broken bone or a bullet in you, and the first time you have to heal, and you go into the healing menu, and it's like, oh shit, you have to select suture, disinfect, bandage. Like, if you get a bullet in you, you have to dig it out with a knife. Like, and also, you have limited supplies, so you can sort of heal something and you'll still be bleeding out or whatever. So you have to manage which injuries are doing the most damage to you. It's like Bushido Blade, where you would like cut your arm in this PlayStation 1 game in a samurai game, and then your arm would be dysfunctional. In the same way, this game incorporates that system not only into Snake, but also into the people you're fighting. Like, if you shoot somebody in the hand, they can't use that hand to fire their gun very well anymore. It's fucking great.
That was so mind-blowing back in the day. Exactly. Yeah. It still is. Yeah. A lot of games still don't do that, you know?
True.
I loved all those systems, too. I loved going into the menu and playing, like, operations on my little Snake guy And part of the reason why I love those systems, I don't know if it's like this with you, Heather, but I love the crunchiness and the crispiness of Kojima's menus.
Yeah.
Just the I'm not a UI dork, but I am a UI dork for Kojima stuff. Like, it's why I love Death Stranding so much, because the entire game is just logistics, the video game.
Yes.
So, like, I just love, like, going into the menu. I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this on my arm here. I'm going to put this on my leg here. All right, I'm ready to go. And then, like, the menu is going, quick. And it feels so good to always do that. And I feel prepared. It's something in my brain clicks where it's like, okay, I accomplished a thing. It's kind of like the gamification of like our smartphones, like when we send emails and then they go like that. Like, you feel like you accomplished something, you know, even though you just send a fucking email, right?
So I also feel like Sony as a company is heavily invested in that sort of like minutia of technology in so much of their hardware design, like whether it be their fucking Vio laptops that have all this weird shit happening in them and like weird little dials and shit on the side of the monitor, or, you know, my personal fetish of mini discs, which were like little tiny crunchy ways to consume music. I played this game for this episode, both on my PlayStation 3 and on my Vita, which I dug out, and you can transfer your save. And this, I don't know when the HD version of this game came out. It was probably 2011, something like that, 2013. But the transferring of your save from the PlayStation 3's large screen in your living room to your Vita in your bedroom feels like a proto Switch, and it works perfectly every single time. Like, there's no, I half expected, because it was such an early implementation of the idea, that it would be clunky or that it wouldn't work sometimes or my save would corrupt, but it works great. And it reminded me also of what a great system the Vita is.
Right. Like, rules.
It feels like this delicate little but sturdy, there's too many buttons on it for some reason, but there aren't enough buttons. And I don't know. It like, if there feels like a Sony design philosophy that extends into the metagame of Metal Gear Solid games. Like, it feels like a love letter to Sony tech. And that also makes sense given that Kojima's the guy who wakes up every day and shows you what he's playing on his Walkman, which is a dedicated Sony audio player.
Yeah.
It's fucking, oh, and by the way, 3 days after I downloaded the game for Vita, they took it off the store.
We should have mentioned this, yeah.
The rights to the footage that they used from events apparently ran out. So I got the game like 3 days before they delisted it everywhere. I felt special. I felt kind of lucky and cool because I got that.
It is the timing is kind of amazing that happened to correspond with just before we're about to record this, like days before we're going to record this episode. And there's always, you know, in these games, like so much like archival footage that's used, which that's a separate issue. But man, I wish they'd tackle all this digital rights regarding like something that's already been released, then like having to be taken down and re-edited is such a bummer. I just always think of all the TV that has to be changed because to re-edit it or you can't find streaming anywhere because of music rights.
Yeah.
It's just such a bummer, all the IP law that prevents that. PS3 and Xbox 360 Metal Gear HD Collection came out in 2011 and for Vita 2012.
His introductions to like the Virtuous mission, and I guess sort of like every cutscene that uses archival footage from the entire game feels like Adam Curtis documentaries. Like,
sure.
It's just like random B-roll of historical events with like somebody talking over it and being like, but the thing is, world systems don't always align. And you're like, oh man, yes. Somebody's telling me something with great authority. I hope they're right about what they're saying, because I'm falling for it.
I always love that, because there's certain contexts where it's like, okay, this is over a codex, so that's one thing. But there's also like, wait, so the end is just standing, the boss is just standing in a field. Like, we're just both standing in flowers while she tells me about like the history of, the Chinese nuclear program. And we're seeing all this archival footage. But in their reality, They're just standing there. Like, they're just like, you just did an 11-minute monologue about mutually assured destruction while we're like standing 4 feet away from each other, a bunch of flowers. I mean, I don't know. This game's so cool. And Matt, I know it's one of your favorites, so I want to make sure that you get to chime in here, because it's just like, this is just one of those ones where you're just like, games rule. It's just like, this is like, it's like a Cold War era James Bond where magic is real. It's just like, this is so awesome. This is the coolest thing.
I guess I've been a little quiet because I'm like, I don't really know what to say about this like perfect game to me. Like, it's such a special game in my life and in my heart. Like, I've mentioned previously, I watched my uncle play through Metal Gear Solid 1, and that was like a very formative experience to me, because I was like, I didn't know games could be like this. This is what,
right.
Also, what is this? Like, what are we talking about here? And I only played Metal Gear Solid 2 for the first time last year, but going into this month, going into, our second Hideo Kojember, it dawned on me that I own 4 copies of Snake Eater. Like, I buy this game when I have the chance. I have it on PlayStation 2. I have the like the HD collection for PlayStation 3 that has all 4, or you know, the as 2, 3, and 4 on it, and then a digital code for the first game. And then I have a digital version of it on Xbox, because I was like, oh, this is like four. It was on sale for like $4, and I was like, well, I should just, you know, I should have this, because that was the version I thought I was going to play for the show.
Sure.
But then I remembered I have the 3DS port of it, and so Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater 3D. And so I dug that out and I was like, this is the version of it that I'm going to play, because this is the most mobile version of it for me. I can play this, you know, in bed, under my blankets at night. And I even special ordered a Circle Pad Pro for my 3DS. And that is the only game that I have for it that uses it. Because, it was not a thing that a lot of games used. I think it's like 50 games or something using the Circle Pad Pro or something. But that thing rocks. I wish more games used it. It's really, it felt really great in my hands. It felt really, really good. A proto Switch for sure.
You were smart to do that, because I also did the 3DS version, because like you, have multiple, I played this before, I have multiple versions of it. And I honestly didn't want to hook up my PS3 again, which I have the HD collection.
That was the other
on.
Thing.
So I was like, I got to get that thing out. Yeah, hey, my 3DS is right here. I'll get the 3DS version, but I don't have the Circle Pad Pro.
Yeah, what am I going to do? My doorstop's not going to be there anymore. What am I going to, what am I going to do to replace my PS3 doorstop?
How dare you.
I actually have an autographed copy of the original Metal Gear Solid 3 on PlayStation 2.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
wow,
it's one of my prized possessions.
I would ask to be buried with that. Like, that's a.
I got it all the way back in college, and I met him and interviewed him, but at that time, I just met him as a fan waiting in line to get an autograph.
So. Wow,
where was this?
Back in LA.
Oh wow.
You should take a photo of that and sell it as an NFT.
There you go.
That's true. That's true.
I don't know if you guys have heard about this. NFTs?
I've heard of them.
So much
NFTs.
Money.
NFTs.
NFTs.
It's truly surprising that that's like the one thing Kojima didn't really predict. He didn't He didn't get that one. He couldn't have foreseen NFTs.
I think that's because the timeline of NFT's existences is going to be a blip.
Sure.
And he's looking at big pictures, you know, he's not dedicating a video game about the 90s to the existence of Beanie Babies. Like, it's just going to be like a small window of time. And you know what? If I'm wrong about this, so what?
I was going to say, we don't know what
his next game
is. We're
all going to die either way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, he always said things about the big picture. Like, that's one of the things. I know we're not talking about Death Stranding, but I played it recently, and that's one of the things that struck me when Hartman tells you that human beings are the only living things that can envision what tomorrow looks like, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, that really hit me right there, you know? Like, and it's just about these bigger ideas, you know, about humanity and what where we're going.
It's not unlike when Snake says, "The earth was blue, but there was no God" in the beginning of this game, which I wrote down because I was like, I'm not quite. Is what he's saying that when you go to space, God's not there? Is that what's happening in that quote? Because he says it so emphatically. He's part so of the, serious.
He's part of the nobody when you say in space, nobody can hear you scream. That's who, yeah, that's who they're talking about. God's not even there.
Ah, I see.
There is a lot of space in this game, and I'm such a space race nerd that I love all this shit. I eat all this up. I love the Fury. You know that this just such a cool character and such a cool boss fight. And also that this is like that was such a thing of like cosmonauts and astronauts. You know, people. I feel like in the U.S. you get a lot of propaganda about the Soviet space program being like, oh, they killed a dog and these cosmonauts died, but like more astronauts died in the U.S. program. But all that shit is cool and all that shit like makes sense as being in this game, like it being so prominent because that was such a big part about the you know. The space race being tied in with rocketry and the nuclear arms race. I love that the boss reveals that she was the first woman in space, like basically,
yeah.
like that becomes a thing, which is eat shit, Valentina Tereshkova. It was the boss.
She's just like Forrest Gumping all over, like the like hit
yeah.
history.
And yeah,
it's so great. Lyndon Johnson is in this.
LBJ.
I have a question about the Fury, who is one of the bosses that you fight. So for those of you listening at home who might be over the age of like 70, a boss is both a character at the end of a level who you fight. And then in this game is meta commentary on the existence of superpowered villains that you have to take on in video games. So the main character is the boss is Big Boss, and then the person they're fighting is the boss. And then there's also a bunch of bosses that you fight, but one of those is the Fury, who is a cosmonaut who says he went to space. And I didn't write down exactly what he said because I just was staring at my screen going, what the fuck is he talking about? Because he's like, I went to space and I saw the Earth was on fire. And I was like, wait, what? Like, is the Fury somebody who went to space and just started hallucinating permanently?
Yeah, or, don't do drugs when you're going into space. That's a waste of drugs, man. I don't know.
My understanding is that it was based off of a real guy. Again, I'm a space racer, but Vladimir Komarov was the first, like before Yuri Gagarin was like just gonna be the first man in space. And he goes up in this faulty craft and he dies on reentry. And if you want to have a real bad time, look up Vladimir Komarov open casket. That's a real gnarly, real gnarly photo.
I've seen it. I've seen that. Wait, now I know what it is because I've definitely seen that.
Really, truly awful. So, and basically, like his while this was happening, like he knew that the craft was faulty, and he's like, there's like audio. The audio was never released, but there's supposedly audio of him like saying, like as he knew he was going to die, like you've killed me, like you've done this. This is your fault. And he's like screaming at the engineers.
Wow, that is grim.
It's really fucking grim. So I think this
played.
Hideo Kojima, everyone. Yeah.
But yeah, that's the idea is that he was in this. He had a similar sort of accident or reentry. He's like covered in full body burns, and now he's this, you know, cosmonaut driven mad and out for vengeance.
I see. Yeah. So my harmless, innocent question about like what the fuck's up with this weird anime hero supervillain guy?
Yeah.
Was met with a real takedown from Nick Weiger, who told me, look at this man's actual open casket.
I'm advising against that. Yeah. No one should do that.
You said do it.
I would
you
hate to find it. Out who the real life allegory is for the end. I would hate to learn.
One of the best boss fights ever made.
Truly.
So cool. So like just one of the coolest things.
I did something there's a couple ways you can play through the game, right? Like you can go through there's an order, of course, with an asterisk, I guess. But every boss fight you can take down however you'd see fit with any weapon, of course, right? But then there's also bonuses if you just take them down. You take their stamina down and not their HP. And so if you use the like tranquilizer gun instead of the regular gun on them, it depletes their stamina, and then you get like you get different camouflages for that. You get enough camouflages throughout the game anyway, but they get, you get special ones based on the bosses. But
oh, wait.
There's also there's also a way to take out the end before, like there's a couple of ways to take out the end that aren't necessarily apparent.
Yeah, so I knew about one of these, but another one I learned researching for this episode. But go on.
So yeah, we've probably talked about every time the game comes up that if you just wait a week, or you know, you set the timer,
you wait a
week in real life, or you set the internal clock on your system to a week ahead, the end will die in the boss fight, and then that's that. That's
because he's a super old man.
Yes.
He uses a wheelchair when he's introduced, and he is, you know, just like it. I think that he's like canonically like 100 years old or mm-hmm. something. His age is super advanced.
He looks great. And but there's another way to kill him. Obviously, you can kill him in the boss fight as normal as you would. But there's a scene early on where you see him. And I think I had heard that you could do this, but I had never tried it myself. And seeing it done, I felt so like,
yeah.
I felt like I broke the game. Like I felt, mm-hmm. it was so crazy because you can get the sniper before you have your sniper rifle before you get this interaction. And so if you have the sniper rifle equipped, you can sort of, you can aim it at him and take him out immediately. And then his wheelchair that he's in goes flying directly to you, like as like an attack almost. And I think you in the process, you also kill his bird, his pet bird, which I regretted. I didn't care for that. You know, I was there to take out another assassin. I'm not here to hurt any animals. None that I couldn't eat anyway. And in that stage, in the end stage, instead, what greets you instead of a boss fight is just a ton of soldiers, just a ton of enemy soldiers that are just there waiting for you.
Got
and
it.
Like, trying to hunt you down and stuff. And you can, if you're stealthy enough, go through them, which is what I did. And then on to the next.
Look at you.
I killed every fucking person I came across.
Well, then that's interesting. I would love to then, you know, talk about another sequence that I think is, well, maybe it's my, maybe you're
well,
wrong.
Well,
my,
but before we move on, because Gene, you were saying first off, you can snipe the end and completely skip this sequence. But also that this boss fight in general, it seems like something that you did that. You've done that before.
Yeah, I totally did that. But like, it was just after the fact that I experienced it for the first time, which was I was like, this boss fight is an hour long. I've never experienced anything like this. and I understood that he was reading a sniper journals like back in the Vietnam War and talking about how people would wait for days and weeks. And as someone who's gone through like Navy, like ROTC training, I've been trained to like be in camouflage and like stay like a whole night at one spot and everything. And that shit is really grueling. And like, I really, really appreciate it. Seeing it in gameplay where it's like, I really, really got to slowly get through it is because this guy is going to see me. Because sure enough, like even when I was doing like the real life Navy training, I was really like crawling like Solid Snake on my chest, you know?
Uh-huh. Right.
And then I got spotted because my pants had fallen down and then whites of my underwear had shown. And then so someone saw me from like way across and I was like, dude, I see your underwear. I was like, God damn it, man. Like I'm like the worst Solid
Snake.
So
not only were you spotted, you were humiliated too.
Yeah, exactly. It was very Kojima-like in a way where it's like,
yes,
I might as well
right.
shit my pants like Johnny, you know?
Matt, you said something earlier about how you can lower their stamina and then you get special camouflage.
Yeah.
And I realized as you were saying that is literally how I beat everybody, was lowering mm-hmm. their stamina. Because I also was like, I don't have the patience for which gun is the one that puts people to sleep and which one is that. I shoot them with every gun. Like if it puts them to sleep and I'm just like shuffling through all my guns and then I'm like, okay, great. Then I'll shoot them in the head with a different gun when they're asleep.
Mm-hmm.
But so one of these bosses is called the Fear, I think, the Spider-Man one. And the boss fight is a bit like the Predator. He's almost invisible in the forest canopy. And he shoots you with these arrows, and you have to remove them immediately in your hospital sub menu. But if you wear down his stamina, he starts shooting other things in the forest to eat them. So you can use that sound in order to help locate him if you haven't thrown up your heat sensor vision binoculars, mm-hmm. whatever the fuck those were called, yeah. which I realized halfway through fighting him, I was like, oh, wait, I have a way to see this fucking thing. But his camouflage kills you, or it eliminates one of their like, if you put on the spider camouflage, it drains your stamina while you're wearing it.
Whoa.
Which I put on because I was like, fuck yeah, I've got your camo, and I put it on, and I'm like, why am I eating so much fucking food after this fight? And then finally realized that one of the camouflages drains you. The other thing I discovered after that is if you leave that fight without removing all the arrows, you're healed for the rest of the game, quote healed, but you've got arrows in your head for the rest. You can't get them out. They're not selectable. So I walked around with just an arrow in my shoulder and an arrow right in my fucking head for the rest of the game.
Like, it's fine. I'll get it later. I'm okay. That's the thing you gotta know.
There's like
fine.
some cutscene later where it disappeared, but for significant hours of play, I had arrows in my head.
Maybe as well, Volgan was torturing him. He's like, all right, I'm just gonna move this.
Yeah, look, I'm trying to hurt you, but you don't deserve this.
Yeah.
That torture sequence made me feel sick.
Which gnarly.
In a video game, is not frequent that happens.
It was a little gross, actually. Yeah. Volgan is a gross character. He's a gross man.
Yes.
He's a boss that you fight who can control electricity. And he tortures you by zapping your body with, he has like a million volts or whatever, a million watts.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Watts, volts?
I think it's watts.
half watts of one, 12 voltage of the other.
Yeah, inexplicably, he has the powers of electricity. Like, I don't think they ever really explained that. Like, he just has it. He's just an X-Men character in the game.
Yeah.
Well, all those dudes are, all of the
bosses
are. Well,
they all are. Yeah, X-Men. Exactly. Yeah. They all are X-Men characters.
The genius of the game is, I think, the genius of the whole Metal Gear series is the idea that a regular military dude would see insane anime villains while trying to complete a pretty standard mission.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we've had a defector. We need you to go take them out. Okay, got it. By the way, on the way there, you're going to fight an old man whose eyeballs can come out of his head. And you're like, okay, wow. All right, got it.
And there's
a man
bees.
Who can control bees.
Yes, right.
You're like, bees?
They're insects who produce honey and have stingers. Damn it, snake.
Like, you gotta walk me back a little further than that. I need a little more information.
How are you the best we've got? You seem like a dumb guy.
I think it's because he's removed every sort of information he could possibly have to just be good at killing and being sneaky. He's that good at that stuff. His everything else is depleted to zero. He rolled zeros on every one of his other stats.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of true to the narrative of the big boss Snake and even Solid Snake, his son or whatever, mm-hmm. where these guys are extremely, extremely good at just finishing the mission. And they do. You know, the Solid Snake was used in Metal Gear Solid 1 and he finished it. He was totally used in Metal Gear. What is his name in this one? Which snake?
He's naked snake in this.
Yeah, naked snake. I can't believe it. Naked Snake was totally used, and he completed his mission. You know, he felt bad about it the whole time, but he did it. You know.
Yeah, and ultimately doesn't quite even know what he's doing until it's explained to him.
Yeah, until it's afterwards, until he's like completely traumatized and decides to punish the whole world for it. You know.
yeah. Later on. Yeah.
Well, I think. I mean. A lot has been said about Metal Gear Solid 2's speech that sort of presages meme vocabulary and, mm-hmm. and information warfare in the modern age. This game's thematic politics mm-hmm. are that every conflict is the reason he uses theme or the theme of this game is scene mm-hmm. is that every conflict is essentially a scene played out between actors and the stage has been set by other powers who mm-hmm. are not necessarily in conflict in the future. Like it's mm-hmm. almost like, you know, Japan is defeated by the Allies' powers. And then now the Glendale Galleria is mostly Japanese stores. And it's the fucking, you know, like you can just go get Naruto action figure. Like it's that once was bad guys, now are friends.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
sort of the theme of the entire video game. I don't know where I'm going with this, but nobody talks about that the way they talk about Metal Gear Solid 2's mm-hmm. speech.
It's yeah, true. Well, I think it's less like prescient. It's more like descriptive, right? It's like I think the reason Metal Gear Solid 2 is like such resonates so much is like holy shit, he like predicted all these things. He predicted the pervasiveness of, you know, of fake news on social media like back in 2001, whereas this is more like, you know, talking about It less has, but I think it's still absolutely a very, you know, trenchant observation. I always think of what you were talking about how there was when Hirohito went to Disneyland in like the '80s, the '70s or '80s. It's such a weird like thing of like, wait, this guy was overseeing, you know, this was the enemy in the war, and now he's just like at Disneyland, just like hanging mm-hmm. out. It's just surreal.
Yeah, what you said, Heather, reminds me of a joke from a Hawaiian comedian, a really old joke, where he would say, you know, yeah, I'm going over a Pearl Harbor, and it's such a tragedy. So many people died, blah blah blah. And who do I see surrounding Pearl Harbor? Japanese, you know, because yeah. it's just a bunch of Japanese tourists right. hanging around in Pearl Harbor, and it's like. You see the world shift in terms of that, and you see how bit players were able to play out their scene, right? And then now they're just kind of like hanging out, you know, and living their lives.
There is a moment where they're like, who knows? In the 21st century, the U.S. and Russia may be allies. You're sort of all right, let's calm down. I do love, you know, because there's just so much crazy shit that happens in this game, and you know, we're almost at the hour mark, and I feel like there's so much stuff we haven't touched on. But just things like, you know, Ocelot is in this game. He's you know, a fixture of the series. You see a young Ocelot, but there's that you can't kill Ocelot. If you kill Ocelot, you get a game over. With it, because you've created a time paradox. Mm-hmm. Because it's just so wild.
We have that audio clip. Actually, right?
Oh, I love
Apodaca?
It.
Yeah.
Snake, you can't do that. The future will change. You'll create a time paradox. You've created a time paradox. Snake, you can't go changing the future like that.
That was actually my ringtone for a while.
Yeah.
Wait, was it really?
Yeah, it made no sense to anybody whatsoever, and I loved it, so...
He says it with such a, you That's fucking awesome. Idiot. Like,
don't you know the future? Haven't you played your own games? Games.
You dumb maniac.
This is a video game after all.
As long as we're talking about weird stuff that we haven't touched on, the way in which Vulgan, Electric Dude, mm-hmm. finds out that Snake is in disguise as the Major... Is yes. that he
Major,
goes Ma- up
Major
to him.
Major Radonovich, we're bringing him up now. Hell yeah. I love him.
Yeah,
the write-in character.
He goes up to him and just grabs his dick. Like, just straight across the room, grabs his dick. And then Snake, and it lingers for a moment.
Yes.
Snake moves away and he does it again. And I was like, this is... What is that? Does that happen in Metal Gear 2 also?
It does. So, the president of the United States.
That's it.
Is trying to find out who Raiden is and just immediately just grabs his crotch. And it just comes out of nowhere. And it reminds when in Death Stranding, when Guillermo del Toro like walks into the shower with Norman Reedus, I was like, what is up with Kojima and like non-consensual man-on-man like contact here?
Yes.
Like, I'm not sure I still haven't really figured that part out. I really don't.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of plunging necklines or just like recurring themes in his canon.
In this one in particular with Eva, yeah, you can like stare at her chest, like as an option. You can right. stare at it.
Also, by plunging neckline, we mean that she is wearing a onesie, like a wetsuit, and unzips it all the way to her belly button every time she meets you.
Yeah, it's, for comfort.
Yeah.
She's just getting comfortable. Yeah, exactly. You know?
That character, Radenovich Rykov, existed, Kojima, like, put that in as kind of like, it's kind of like if in episode two there had been a Jar Jar, like, who gets, you know, like a character to make fun of Jar Jar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. They were like, they put in a character to kind of make fun of Raiden. I don't know. It's such an interesting bit of self-awareness and self-commentary. And I guess just fan service, too.
Yeah, I think of that sequence as is sort of like, because you're putting on a costume. You're putting on a mask that looks like him, and you put on his... like his uniform. And to me, that's sort of saying, you see, it's the same fucking game. You're playing the same game. It's he just looks different. It's the same fucking thing.
I'm still going to grab your dick either way. No matter.
Yeah.
No matter what your face looks like, I'm grabbing that dick. You know?
We haven't touched on it yet, but it's you know, it's I think a thing that one of the biggest things in this game is the theme. It's just like one of the coolest music tracks ever is the title track, Snake Eater.
Oh, yeah. I first heard that song so I saw the trailer for Metal Gear Solid 3 at E3 when it debuted. And it was just like I felt like I was seeing God, you know? I was like, this is the next Metal Gear.
Yeah.
And it has a guy that looks like Snake. That's awesome.
Right.
And then I heard the theme song and I was like, what is this song? And then my good colleague or not a fellow game journalist, Ash Parrish, wrote on Kotaku, if you want to find it, just last year, actually, where she found a singer of Snake Eater.
Cynthia Harrell.
Because she was just fascinated by this black woman being so key in this iconic song in video games. And she was able to hunt down Cynthia and then tell Cynthia about the legacy of her song and how many memes and how much people love it. And Cynthia was just like, and then she said, you know, like, what have you done? You brought back all kinds of memories, Jesus. Like, she started to really like feel great about like her contribution to the game and the series. It's a really
amazing.
lovely story that you guys want to check out.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I remember reading it when it dropped, and it's just amazing. They tracked this person down. Also, and I didn't realize this, the same singer as I Am the Wind from Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's hear this song.
Silence through the night. What a thrill.
It's just, it's so good.
That you can do like a Bond homage, but also be it like have it be like as good as like a Bond song.
Yes.
It's just like so, it's such a big swing and I love it.
And it's funny.
I
had not heard it other than like the clips we've played on this show. And I laughed out loud during the song.
Yeah. Some days.
Because it is like, it's so such a moment.
Yeah.
Right. But you're talking lyrically, right, Heather?
Yeah, lyrically.
Yes.
Like when, I mean, I feel, are we going to get there in the song?
We might
get
there.
We have to play through the joke.
We'll keep it going.
I wonder if there's anywhere you could karaoke this.
I've searched high and low for a karaoke book that has this, and I haven't found it. I don't know if I can hit the notes too.
No, it's tough.
Someday you go through the rain.
on a tree frog.
There's that line.
It's like telling you the plot of the game.
It's great because like it's so basically good. Until that lyric, which is like such a reference to the to you know the game's food system. But until that lyric, you could just kind of be listening like, oh yeah, this is a jam. It's like, wait, what'd she say about eating a tree frog? What was that?
I love theme songs that just refer or basically recite like what the show or the game is about. Like just tell me that I'm jumping on mushrooms or eating mushrooms or eating tree frogs. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good theme song.
This isn't the only vocal music in the game. Mm-hmm. There are frequencies on Snake's radio. I feel like that almost... I feel like this is a Death Stranding-esque thing, is that there is a bunch of real music in the frequencies that you can access on Snake's earpiece that will heal your stamina. And they're all real songs from real people, you know? Like, that's nice.
Yeah.
It's a little Grand Theft Auto-y or a little Stranding.
Yeah, and the ending credits song is by a band named Star Sailor, You've Got a Way to Fall. Kojima was the guy who introduced me to that band, and I became a fan of that band. That's why I love Kojima games, because he just puts in music. He's like a friend who's like, again, back to what you said, Heather, he really is just showing you his different toys. It's like, hey, you're playing my game? Hey, I like this band. Check this out. Check out this song. And it's like, really matches with the game, doesn't it? And you're like, yeah, it totally does. You know, I love this band.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to end up at a Low Roar concert someday. I haven't gone to a concert in so long. And I'm just going to be there like wearing a Death Stranding t-shirt with everyone else wearing a Death Stranding t-shirt. I mean, that song also just like the, for me, just as far as a mind-blowing gaming moment when that, and we don't need to play the audio, but when that track comes back a cappella during that interminable ladder climb, it's just such like a cool, like, you can just do that in a game. You know what I mean? It's just like, you can just have like a moment of just pure traversal with music playing, and that interactivity, that limited interactivity, can just be so aesthetically pleasing that it's just like this amazing, you know, or this amazing moment.
Yeah. And it's like, he took that moment and stretched it out across Death Stranding basically. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the whole game. The ladder climb. He's like, oh, maybe if the ladder was horizontal.
Yeah. There's just so much that's so cool in this. It's an awesome game, and we could talk about it all day, but I think we need to get to our final thoughts. It's time for our review crew. So we will each say something positive about this and give it a numerical decimal rating. I mean, I guess I just like we were talking like earlier, the kind of Forrest Gumpy, you know, elements of this, but just LBJ personally conferring upon Naked Snake the title of Big Boss is just like a funny thing to think about, is like a thing that happened in U.S. history. it's just, I don't know. It's such a cool game. There's also a detail that and Matt, maybe you picked this up in your 3DS playthrough, but you reach when Naked Snake loses his eye, which is a thing that happens in this game. You can't use the 3D depth slider anymore after that. It's just like, that's such, what a fucking, this was a port.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
This was a port of a PS2 game, and they're like, well, the 3DS has 3D, and then once he loses an eye, he wouldn't have depth perception anymore. So yeah, you gotta disable the 3D slider. Just like, what a fucking cool thing to throw
crazy.
In there.
Wow, you don't even have to go that far. Nobody would care.
Yeah.
That's crazy. No.
Yeah, you had me at, I could take this to the bank. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. I love it. I mean, this is a 10 out of 10 for me. Heather, what do you think?
I really liked, this is a very, very, very small detail in the game, but PlayStation 2 didn't have a lot of interactive foliage, right? Mm. Like moving grass around when you're crawling is that was kind of remarkable for the PlayStation 2. Like most of the time it would be like a two-dimensional blade of grass that sort of like had a set movement animation. But not only do you move the grass around while you're climbing through the grass in this game, bullets, as they fly through the grass, move the grass and like whip it towards you in the wake of the wind of the bullet. And that shit, I was like, that's fucking awesome. That's so great. It's a very small detail, but these, I feel like Kojima games are at their best when they are drowning in details that nobody needs because it makes the game feel like a really fancy shoebox diorama with a bunch of tiny little moving parts and a bunch of little tiny details that you wouldn't notice the first time you open the shoebox. That being said, I fucking hate sneaking. 9.5.
All right, Matt.
I mean, yeah, this is easily one of my favorite games of all time. Maybe, you know, maybe my number one, even if playing it again for the first time in a long time for this show was like, so I loved it. I loved going right through it. It was like putting on an old pair of jeans or something. I loved it. My positives, obviously, we talked a bit about the different bosses, but one of my favorite boss sequences in the game, which we didn't talk about, was the Sorrow, with the Sorrow. And so that's a guy you find out has been dead the entire game. And he presents, this boss battle presents itself as he's a ghost. And there are maybe a bunch of ghosts in this part. You're just walking down a river, basically, and the ghosts of everyone that you have killed in the game so far are walking toward you as well. So it shows you, depending on how many people you've killed in the game, that's how many ghosts there will be. If you did none, there wouldn't be any. It'd be a shorter sequence. But if you were running and gunning running and gunning it like it was like Grand Theft Auto or something,
okay, there's going to be what happened
a bunch of there's going to be a ton of ghosts there. And I always thought that sequence was so cool. When I was young, when I first played this
one
game,
one of the trailers for the game made fun of Grand Theft Auto. Remember when Raiden was like, what is this, some kind of Grand Theft Auto?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, Raiden, you better be careful. Those are fighting words around here. So that sequence is really cool to me. When I was a kid and I played this for the first time, that sequence took me what felt like days because it was, I killed everybody. This time around, I was a little more careful. But my favorite thing in that sequence is this quote from the game that is just like the scariest thing anyone could yell at you in a boss fight. And it's this. It's from The Sorrow. You will all be killed by your own sons. There's a bunch of lines like this in that game that I'm like, Jesus Christ, relax a little bit. It's this game rocks. 10 out of 10. It's perfect. I love it. It's amazing. Wow.
Gene, your thoughts, your score.
Yeah, I'll say one positive that we haven't mentioned. I love the Shagohod fight and how cinematic it was. The fact that you can aim and shoot, and then you can see a different perspective than if you don't aim and shoot. If you just leave the game alone and just shoot and not aim, the game will have all these wonderful cinematic camera angles, like during that chase sequence.
Yes.
It just felt like I was like, I'm just watching like a Michael Bay movie. I love this.
Right. You know?
And like, it was just something that I had never seen before, where like I'm playing the game and the game is just like doing all kinds of crazy camera angles, and I still feel like I'm playing the movie, and it's not a QuickTime event. So, you know, we go back to talking about how much Kojima was so influential in how storytelling is told. That was another instance for me where I was like, he's just pushing the boundaries even more. Like, this is incredible. I've never seen anything like this. And then we do see stuff like that now in the Uncharted games, but you're still not being chased by a huge Shagohod fucking robot tank, you know? Like, it's still not as cool as that. We got a babe on the back of your bike, you know? Like, that shit is just awesome. So yeah, just 10 out of 10. Like, I just like, I love the story. Like, by the end of it, I remember I was crying. I was like, man, you know, Big Boss got really betrayed, and like Eva's crying, and I didn't even really like her character, and I felt sorry for her. Yeah, it just, you know, and then just all the I love the Russian inventor of the Metal Gear, where he just like toasts Snake and says to capitalism, and like, you know, that still continues to be relevant today. So
yeah, okay, I'll amend my score because I don't want to be the one that holds this one back. Mm-hmm. I'll also give it a 10.
Wow.
I like the sneaking too. I love the part where, you know,
yeah, okay, 9.5. You're right. I forgot. Yeah, there you go.
I love the part where you have that house and there's just a bunch of soldiers and you can shoot through the roof or shoot through the ground. Like that's just like open world game stealth, like perfection right there. Like one thing about, you don't see a lot of stealth games these days. And when you play them, you realize how fucking good Kojima was at making stealth games, because he has all these systems in place to make it interesting and make it engaging, other than you're just duck walking and crouching through things and stabbing people in the back. Like he really, really thinks about what all the different elements of what stealth looks like. And Snake Eater was a huge investment in that regard too.
And it's not just it's kind of open worldy. It's not just like a puzzle to solve, like, because some stealth games can feel like oh, this is just a puzzle. I just got to figure out exactly how to progress through this, and that'll work. It's like oh, I got to figure out how to address this scenario, and there's all sorts of different tacks that you can take.
Yeah, with the tools that I have, exactly. It's so fun.
Yes, yeah, it rules.
There's a whole thing that we didn't talk about that I loved, which was everything you kill turns into a little like food kit, and then you eat it, and then Snake tells you how it tastes. And I know so you'll be like, you'll taste like a moose, or I don't know what the fuck it was, like some kind of like beast. Yeah. And he's like, "Ew, this is pretty good." And you taste a snake and he's like, "Fuck, this sucks." like the Russian rations are bad. Mm-hmm. The calorie mate is good. Like you eat an alligator and he's like, not too bad. Like everything in the game has a different flavor. And apparently if you subject him to something that also it goes rotten, like it'll get flies on it. And then if you eat it, it makes you sick. But if you subject him to something he doesn't like, he grows to be okay with it. Or maybe it's the other way. Like if you eat it like something four times that he doesn't like, it'll give him a little bit more stamina each time, because he's like, don't like this fucking bat that I'm eating again, but I'll take it. It's great. 10. Yeah, I'll give it a 10. Just,
yeah.
I forgot about the food.
Yeah, you forgot about the eating part.
Well, hey, those were our thoughts on Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater, but maybe we're wrong.
Maybe we were wrong. We've got reviews that we've culled from the entire internet, and if we had a positive take on this game, these will be negative reviews, and if we had a negative take on this game, these will be positive reviews. It's the segment that changes every podcast. Maybe we were wrong. I've got a review that is far too long to read. But I'll just read the main header and the bullet points about Metal Gear Solid 3. This is from Reddit, and it was posted a year ago by Ice Pick the God. Metal Gear Solid 3 is great, but comically overrated. And the bullet points go like this. Number one, the survival mechanics prioritize realism over gameplay. They are implemented horribly apart from food. Okay. Two, the controls and mechanics feel like a step down from Metal Gear Solid 2. Three, gameplay is slower in 3. Four, Metal Gear Solid 3 is too easy. Five, the fact that you get practically all your arsenal in the first quarter of the game, this completely ruins the minimalist bare essentials arsenal theme from Metal Gear Solid games, theme that Metal Gear Solid games are all about. So those are the five negative review points from this review on Reddit. And I disagree with all of them. I also thought this was better paced than Metal Gear Solid 2.
It is a little easier, but I like the fact that you get the weapons at the beginning, because again, like you have the tools to figure out like what situations are. That's so much fun. It makes the game so much more open-ended and so fun to replay.
For my final blow against the boss in the field, I shot her with a rocket launcher. I saw that she had such little HP left.
Yeah,
that I was like, well, this will be really funny.
Man, do you remember the basics of CQC? No. Yeah. No.
Well, I was going to end this real quick.
I'm going to say my bittersweet goodbye to my mentor by exploding her. I just pulled one. This is from Metacritic, and this is a 0 from Ivan Drago. And I just like this because this was posted on June 27th, 2004. And I'll probably love this game when it comes out because I love all of the others. But because it's not out and I don't know, for now I'm giving it a big fat zero to drop the score because of all the fanboys voting prematurely. Now this user score is not accurate thanks to them. I just like this guy's adherence to protocol. He's like, stop saying this game's good when it's not out yet. Let's wait and see, even though I know it's going to be good.
That's so wild.
I love it.
I have one here from Reddit. And the subject line here is unpopular opinion, MGS3 sucks. And here's what they had to say. This was posted 4 years ago. I posted here for the same reasons a month ago and I'm stuck somewhere halfway through the game. I can't for the life of me play this game without a radar. What idiot thought it would be a good idea to get rid of the radar? Honestly, this would probably be my favorite Metal Gear if they just kept radar for use. Instead, I have to spend 20-30 minutes in every room cheesing the enemies until I get lucky. I know, get good. The problem is that some of us have actual work that we need to get done so that we can live in this world. When I get back from my crap job, I want to be able to have fun and be challenged by a fair mechanic, not this idiotic gimmick. Bring on the flames. So sorry, this guy had to work and could not couldn't get it done. Couldn't get good.
Well, if there, but I mean, like, you know, that's the thing with Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 is that you're spending so much time looking at your mini map. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like you're looking at, like, where, what are the cones of vision of everyone and how do I navigate the scenario based off of this? You know, I'm looking at this 2D representation mm-hmm. of the battlefield rather than the world. I don't know. It's just, I understand getting frustrated by that change, but it's also like that's what's cool about it, and it's also justified based off of the era that it's set in.
Yeah. There wasn't radar at the time.
Yeah,
sweetie.
Yeah, and they explain that in the game, and it helps you focus on the details that Heather talked about, like the grass swishing with the bullets. Like you see those details pop more when you're not staring at the top right of your screen.
Right.
It's fucking great. It's great. Also, you can throw your rations to distract a guard and they're like, oh, I'm hungry. And they go over and they eat it. But if it's bad food, they're like, oh, and they throw up. You shoot them in the head.
I haven't seen if this was actually true, but I was reading that if you shoot guards in the dick during the sequence in the sorrow, they come back as ghosts being like, oh, ow.
Oh, yes, that is true. That is true. That does happen. I did a whole run where I was just doing that, and I just wanted to see everybody just grabbing their dicks like as they cross river sticks. That totally happens. I played the game so many times, and just to see what happens during the river sticks portion, and just to see, like, okay, nobody's showing up because I didn't kill anybody. Okay, now they're all grabbing their dicks. Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, it's time for the question block.
All right, this one's from @DecepticonDan on Twitter, and they write, played through every MGS game in the span of 3 months for the first time, and it was an amazing experience to binge them and not lose track of the story bits. What game series do you think would benefit from binging, and did you ever play every title of a series in a short time?
Ooh.
Great question. I started doing that with the Mass Effect trilogy, which I'd never played. And then Mass Effect Legendary Edition, I played 1 and 2 back to back, and I was about to go into 3, and then I get distracted with having to play games for this this podcast. So I haven't gotten back to 3 yet, but it was awesome just to play those back to back and experience that for the first time, because it was also like, this world completely rules. Like, this is such a cool universe, and what a cool way to experience it. And then you also get to see, like, oh, wow, I see what, you know, 4 extra years of development did between 1 and 2, what, you know, all the refinements they made, and just all, like, in addition to seeing how the story progresses and where the characters end up and what new characters are introduced, just to sort of see, like, oh, this is how the gameplay was iterated upon back to back is just like a really cool experience. Yeah, I would say, like, I honestly would advise that if you like science fiction and you never played the Mass Effect franchise, I think that Mass Effect Legendary Edition is a great jumping on point and a great series just kind of play all in a row.
That's a great bingeable series for sure.
No.
I wonder what it would be like to play Last of Us 1 and Part 2 back to back, like immediately upon finishing Part 1 to drop in Part 2 and immediately go for it. Like, I wonder if it would feel jarring in the way that some Star Wars movies don't line up with the next Star Wars movie, mm-hmm. like emotionally, or if it will feel, it would feel like one continuous narrative that's like, okay, this thing that just happened, that's what's affecting you right now, day one of the next game, right?
I actually did the same thing.
I mean, I replayed Last of Us 1 and played Left Behind before playing Part 2. And yeah, I don't know. What was your take? I actually felt it flowed pretty decently.
I hadn't finished the original Last of Us when we recorded the Left Behind episode leading into the episode we did for Part 2. So I played through 1, did Left Behind, and then went straight into 2. And, you know, 2 plays a little bit better because it was on PS4. It was, you know, obviously late in the PS4 run. And I was playing the PS3 version of Last of Us. So, you know, it's a little, not like it's clunky or anything. You know, the generations get smaller and smaller with how they're like improved. But it wasn't that crazy of an experience. It kept the story. I felt more connected to the characters. Because I had just gotten finished with, you know, their first round with this tragic world that they live in. And then it's worse. It's gotten worse.
I remember, Gene, you'd written about the Last of Us 2 a decent amount. I don't know. Did you revisit Part 1 before digging into Part 2? I know you'd seen the spoilers. I remember that.
Yeah, I had seen the spoilers. I didn't play it right before Part 2. I liked having the distance from it.
Right.
And I like just like Heather said, like it would have felt jarring for me if I had played it, and it felt just right for me to play it whatever years later. And I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm catching up with these characters again." So it felt really, really good. And for me, it helped me enjoy the story.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Is there a series you can think of as particularly bingeable, or one where you're like, I think if you played this all in a row for the first time or revisited it, it would resonate?
I don't know if I can actually binge a series, but I mean,
sure.
You know, one series that I do tend to play a lot, but they're bad for binging because you do burn out, as a Yakuza series. And the Yakuza series are very good for anyone who likes story-driven, like cutscenes, very emotional, melodramatic acting. They're to me, they're the best in class in the games industry, but you know, so much of it takes place in the same city blocks that you eventually kind of burn out at like seeing the cutscenes.
Sure.
But it feels like that once you enjoy that game, you're going to want to jump into the next one pretty quickly. So, you know, if any listeners are out there and you really just enjoy story driven games, the Yakuza series, start with Yakuza 0, are just like fantastic.
It feels like a message directed at me personally, because we played Yakuza 0 for the podcast, and I put like 80 hours into 0 and loved it. I was like, this is awesome. This is such a cool world. These characters are so cool. I love the batshit, you know, sub stories. And I was like, should I just dedicate the next year in my life to playing the entire series? And I kind of feel like I need to dig into it.
You should dig into it, but yeah, just watch out for Yakuza Burnout, because like after playing like 2-3 games straight, like you're like, okay, I think I'm done and I should start playing some other games or living life some other way.
So. those are in my queue. I'm gonna tackle them. I'm gonna tackle at least a couple of them in short order after I get to Mass Effect 3.
It's a good one.
Yeah,
we're gonna die before we can play all the games.
That's what's tough to answer about this question, is because it's also like a big part of it implied is like, do you have a spare 300 hours?
Yeah.
This hobby is so demanding of people's time, and we're all adults here. So yeah, it'd be awesome to, man, I would love to start with a Metal Gear Solid 1 and go through everything and play some of the ones I've never played before.
Yeah, I wish I was 9 years old again. Come on. If I was 9 years old, I could be playing Forza Horizon 5 all day.
Yes.
You know? hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at GetPlayedPod, or send us an email at GetPlayedPod@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 6162PLAY. That is 616-275-2933. Our music and engineering are by Devin Bryant. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs. Our guest, the great Gene Park. Gene, thank you so much for being here. What a treat.
I love being here.
Oh, God bless you. Please come back anytime. Thank you for being so generous with your time, and thank you for lending all of your insights and your passion for this game. Anything you would like to plug?
Just follow me on Twitter and keep reading my articles. If you like my articles and want to keep supporting what I do, and you want to subscribe to the Washington Post, the best way to do it is just to click the article that with my name on it, and then just hit the subscribe button, like wherever, like that counts. That'll help me so much. So Wow. Yeah, read the Washington Post, work subscribe, and if you're gonna subscribe, do it right after you read one of my articles.
Go ahead and do that and read Gene's writing and follow Gene on social media. A great follow and a great writer on all things video game. Thanks so much, Gene. And Matt, tell us next week's game.
Next week's game, Death Stranding Director's Cut. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Bucket.
Death Stranding Director's Cut.
Death Stranding Director's Cut.
Death Stranding Director's Cut.
Metal Gear?
Metal Gear?